Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work for technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that is teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Ruth King. She helps businesses stay profitable and build wealth. I'm really curious to find out how she does that. And I'm also interested to learn how someone who has a background in chemical engineering even got into that field. Doesn't seem like a straight line. And she's an author too. So what are her books about? Probably not about chemical engineering. So I'm really interested to learn about all that she has done in her career. So welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, Ruth.
Thanks, Neil, for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I did mention that you studied chemical engineering. So what was the motivation to get into that?
Well, when I was in high school, I thought I wanted to be a doctor. And freshman year in college, I decided that I didn't want to be a doctor anymore. And I was a math chem major. So the next logical thing was chemical engineering. And there were no women back then either. We're talking about, 70s. We're not talking about like 2020s these days. So it was an interesting time period. I had two jobs in summer jobs that I absolutely loved, and then had got in the real world and absolutely hated it. So I went back to school and got my MBA and realized that, hey, I'm really good at numbers. And so I started working with a small business development center. I started one up in Decatur, Georgia, which is a suburb of Atlanta, back when it wasn't a full-fledged, government cabinet area. We didn't know whether we were going to survive or not, but that gave me the background into being able to help businesses. And then I found one of my colleagues that I was going to grad school with was working with Service America, which was a national franchisor of heating and air conditioning companies, and they needed some help. I found a niche, never left it for a really long time. I still work a lot in heating and air, but I've added plumbing, electrical, pull and spot generators, all sorts of businesses that are outside of construction also. So that's how I got where I am today.
Wow. That's quite a journey. And I actually had considered becoming a doctor too when I was younger. What changed my mind about that was the TV show ER. Do you remember that show?
I do remember ER. What changed my mind was seeing people who were in medical school who were just crazy. I thought if those are doctors, we're in trouble.
Well, what really changed my mind about it with regards to ER was I remember watching, the episodes, and I'd see that the doctors had to sleep in the hospital and they would be woken up at various times to do their rounds or do surgeries. And I thought to myself, no, that ain't for me. I need my 8 hours. I don't want anyone waking me up at any old time. That's I got to do something else. All right. Yeah. That's cool. So you got a chemical engineering degree, you have an MBA. I think you mentioned you worked in heating and air. I mean, was that always the goal to go into that field, or what even drew you to that?
I had a friend who was working for Service America, and they were a franchisor of heating and air conditioning, and they needed some help on the business side and financial side of working with the contractors. And I found a niche, and that's essentially how it happened. And grew it, got my license in Georgia, more often than not, because all these people say, what do you know? And I could point a license at them and say, I passed the test just like you did, it makes life a little bit easier, that type of thing. And then I started teaching financials. I started teaching them in English rather than accounting babble. And I started writing books. I have my sixth book that's coming out in September, which is 101 Dumb Financial Mistakes Business Owners Make and How to Avoid Them. So, it's been fun. I've done a lot of speaking over the years, and I should probably tell my first speaking story. Would that be okay?
Well, I'm not going to tell you no, Ruth.
You can say no. So anyway, my husband used to train, and he did a lot of production for a lot of the Fortune 500 companies. And I really had not given speeches before. I mean, I gave them in college here and there, but nothing where it was going to be somebody who was going to take it and be able to go out and use the information that I was giving them, the next day in their businesses. And so I wrote my first speech. I literally wrote it out and I practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. And then I recorded the speech. And so my husband looked at it and he was like, ugh, how can you do that? That was really bad. Da, 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 da. So I joined Toastmasters. I joined National Speakers Association back in the 80s and I learned how to speak. I learned how to actually convey thoughts, feelings, emotions, and give it to them in bite-sized pieces that they could understand and take away and actually use in their businesses. So my husband didn't go to any of my speeches for many years. And then he went to one like 4 or 5 years later and he goes, wow, have you improved? I'm like, yeah, practice makes perfect.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, certainly if you start off one place and then 4 to 5 years later you're still in the same place, and maybe something seems to be wrong there. When I first started giving presentations, it wasn't even something that I was looking to do. It was kind of forced upon me, but it doesn't seem like it was really forced upon you. But I'm kind of curious, when did you see the benefit? When did you realize the benefit of getting better or just being adept at giving presentations or public speaking in general?
I needed to get my points across. I needed people to do the things that help them be more profitable, build the wealth of their business, work with their technicians, work with their field personnel, work with their office personnel. And everything you do is really a speech. I mean, when you really and truly think about it, everything you do, you are speaking, you are hopefully influencing, you're getting them to get on board and say, yeah, I understand why I need to do this. And yeah, this is how I can do it. And then you have the lovely speeches when they have their key performance indicators and they're not making them and they don't care. Those are not the fun ones. The fun ones are when they're doing really, really well and you can give them pats on the back. So speaking and being very clear and concise is really important in whatever you do, whether it's, being in front of an audience of 1,000 or whether it's one-on-one with an employee who, well, they're not kind of doing their job just right. It's like, what can we do to help you? Do you really want to do this? And those are the types of speeches which nobody ever sees, but if you, other than the employee and you, but if you can make them feel really, really good and make them want to do what they need to do, you've succeeded.
Ruth, when you were talking, it also reminded me of the fact that at some point you decided you're going to work for yourself. So, what was the motivation for you to even make that decision?
Well, I found the Mission Service America and we had Black Friday, so to speak. And I had had a business before I went to Service America that had gone south. And then after those 18 months, I swore I'd never go work for anybody else again. And I built the business. And so the Business Ventures has been in business now for 40 some odd, 42 years. And it really is a situation where I'm at the point where people can absolutely understand what the goal is. If they don't want to do it, that's fine. I won't work with them. So, I mean, I've been an entrepreneur. I knew I was going to have my own business when I was a kid. I mean, I used to sell flowers off of my mother's flower garden by the side of the road. Yeah.
That's so
Entrepreneurship.
great.
Yeah. Entrepreneurship's been in our blood. My dad was an entrepreneur. My grandfather was an entrepreneur. So it's like, people say you're not born with it, but the ability to take risks and the ability to actually understand about making mistakes that they're not fatal and they should teach you a lesson and don't do it again. And then it's not a mistake, it's a learning process. So the risk-taking training that I got from my dad and from my grandfather, if somebody's working for somebody else, they don't generally get that type of, growing up discussions.
Wow. Ruth, it's very rare that I hear people that made that jump to entrepreneurship that quick. I mean, for a lot of people, at least I've done over 200 episodes of this so far. And all the people, for the great majority of them that eventually did become entrepreneurs, it took them a while to even get up the courage to even make that jump to say, I'm gonna do my own thing, and I'm not gonna have to the backing of a company behind me. So kudos to you for figuring that out early on. I mean, it took me almost probably over 10 years to really make that jump myself, because I didn't want to be in the cubicle anymore. And I didn't want someone telling me what I had to work on. And basically, I didn't want to be told what to do. So again, I commend you for making that choice. I don't know if you shared this, but you said that at some point you didn't want to work for someone ever again. What was, I guess, the catalyst to make you think this is it? It's entrepreneurship now.
Well, it was entrepreneurship before Service America. And then that 18 months where I went and got a quote unquote job really showed me that I really don't need a job. I need to be able to do my own thing, to be able to actually help a lot of people and not live under the rules of this is what you have to do, this is what you have to work on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I knew I could help businesses and I knew the financial piece of it. And going out and starting to train business owners on what a P&L and a balance sheet was, and you have to be clear about those types of things. So when you're speaking, if you're not speaking clearly, then everybody gets confused and nobody wins in that particular case, because they walk away going, that was awful, or there's no way in God's green earth I want to look at the financial side of my business. And that's not the point. The point is you start a business to help somebody, put food on people's tables, solve a problem, so, you know, produce a product that will help people. But what keeps you in business is understanding the financial side of business, so that you can watch the trends and make sure that your profitability is going the right way. You can make sure that if you have inventory isn't creeping up on you, and all of a sudden you have all this stuff in a warehouse that, and where did it go? Well, it ate your cash up. So do you have a problem paying payroll? So all of it's interconnected. And so the reality of the situation is you don't get into business. None of us, I didn't get into business to do what I'm doing either, believe it or not. But what really keeps people in business is the financial thing and looking at numbers every month and making sure you spend 30 minutes a month. And we all waste 30 minutes a month. You know, the way I look at it is I'm going to give a heating and air example. And also, I think some people who are electrical or EEs also understand this. First time an HVAC contractor or tech or an installer looks at a wiring diagram, it looks like Greek to them. They don't know what to do with it. They don't know what it's saying. They don't know what it's meaning. It might be, you know, from a chemie perspective, your first unit ops class. You don't know what you don't know. I mean, you just don't. But you invest the time to learn it. And then a year later, you're going, why was that so hard? You know, and all of you who are, you know, geeks have been through things, have looked at programming and from that perspective. And then financials are the same thing. The first time you look at them, it looks like Greek, or it looks like, you know, something you truly don't understand. If you just invest a little bit of time every day or every week to see what this is doing and this is saying, all of a sudden the light bulb goes on and go, why did I ever think this was hard? Same thing. I mean, we're all, you know, geeks, so to speak. We've all had the knowledge of going, what in the world is that?
Absolutely. How did your engineering education prepare you for what you do now?
Gee, that's the question my dad always used to ask me when I went out and started my business again. He said, I pay for all this education. And my answer to him and my answer to everybody is this. Going to engineering school teaches you a way to attack problems. It teaches you an approach to be able to handle any situation and figure out what you need to do to resolve that situation. And if engineering school did nothing else but teach me that, I've taken that throughout my career.
Yeah. That's a good answer. And I think, and it's an appropriate answer. It's certainly an answer that would lend itself to people who ended up doing something outside of engineering, because I think that's ultimately the response. That's true. It's just engineering school helps you learn how to solve problems, and there's problems all over the place outside of engineering even, and they need to be solved.
So it was funny. Yeah. I do coaching, but I also have a coach in a mastermind group. And for whatever reason, we were in a Zoom room, and unbeknownst to them, they put four chemies in that room. As we found out, as we were talking to each other, and none of us were doing chemical engineering, you know, the unit ops and that type of thing. We were all in businesses. Yes, we all used our training, but we were using it to solve problems of any number of different things.
Huh, imagine that. That's so random that were to happen. But you know, it's not as uncommon as I initially thought. You know, I mentioned that I've done a number of these episodes, and a number of people who got engineering degrees ended up doing something completely different. But they don't look at their engineering education as a waste because they're not working in engineering anymore. As you said, it's now we're using our ability to solve problems, become more systematized in our thinking, more analytical in our thinking to solve these other problems that exist for people. And people are willing to pay us to solve these problems just outside of engineering. So nothing was a waste. So this is excellent. I mean, you know, I did mention in the intro, Ruth, that you work with businesses helping them to stay profitable and build wealth. How did you come, I guess, what motivated you to come across or to focus on wealth building?
Well, when I was 55, I finally figured out why I was put on this earth. Believe it or not, I mean, I'd done a lot of work in a lot of different areas and things along this line, always on the financial side and the operations side of businesses. And it light bulb went on one day and it said, your purpose of being on this earth is to give business owners the tools and process to get and stay profitable, build wealth, achieve the goals they want to achieve, and give back. And so I really started focusing at that point on what it takes to be profitable, stay profitable. And in order to build wealth, you've got to have profitable, you know, have that profitability first, because if you're not profitable, you can't build wealth. So the first book that I wrote was called The Courage to Be Profitable. And it really and truly goes through P&Ls and balance sheets and how you do pricing and things along those lines. In English, not accounting battle. And then after that, people were still ignoring their balance sheets. And then I wrote Profit or Wealth, which actually goes one step further in terms of understanding what a balance sheet actually is and how to use the balance sheet to generate wealth. I mean, there's rules of profit and there's rules of wealth, and those are both in that book. And then the final sequel to those two books is 101 Dumb Financial Mistakes, because I've seen them. And I'm sure I can write another 101 Dumb Financial Mistakes books in a couple of years, because I'll find more.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, this is, it's interesting to learn about just even people like you that focus on that type of thing, because you just assume that if you start a business and you're making money, that's it. But it's not just about the money you make. It's about the money you're able to keep. And it's just about thinking about, I guess, being more intentional about the money that you're making and what you're doing with it. And I think, yeah, that's probably one of the mistakes, one of the 101 mistakes. It's just, you know, making money and not really thinking about what to do with it and spending it on various things. And, you know, this didn't work out, but should we have spent money on this in the first place? And I don't know. It just seems like it can get kind of sticky at times.
Well, if you're starting a business and all you want to do is make money, you will not succeed. You have to have a passion for what you're doing. You have to like what you're doing, because I promised you, not every day is roses and fun times. When the tough times come, you've got to remember why you're doing this, how you're helping people, rather than just making a buck. And those are the businesses that do really well. And those are the businesses who leave a legacy, so to speak. You know, people will sell their businesses after a period of time or either pass them down to the next generation and go and do some phenomenal things to help more people. You know, you talk about the serial entrepreneurs. They start a business, they sold it. They end up doing another business and they sell it. And each time they do it, if they do it right, they're able to help more and more and more people. And if that's not the reason for being in business and that's not your passion, stay working for somebody else.
Yeah.
Because you will fail eventually.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny you mentioned the term serial entrepreneur, and you're right. In many instances, it's somebody who starts a business, sells, and starts another one. But it could also be someone who starts a business, fails at that business, and starts another one.
Well, that's true. I mean, most serial entrepreneurs fail in one business, but it's a learning experience. And I look at it from that perspective. Okay, what did you learn? What are you not going to do again? And you start over again, and you keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Ruth, when I first started Well, the whole idea of this podcast comes from my own failings giving presentations in front of management when I worked as an engineer. Those first few presentations were really bad. And one of the reasons I think they weren't all that great is because I didn't put a whole lot of time into figuring out what the people in the audience wanted to know before I put the presentations together. So oftentimes I'd get these questions after the presentations that I thought I had answered. Basically, I had no process for really putting my presentations together. Do you have a process for putting your presentations together? And if so, what is it?
I do. I have a series of topics that I talk about, but each presentation is tailored to the audience. So for example, if we're going to be talking about, let's say, profit, you know, how to generate pricing properly and profit pricing and that type of thing, are the businesses who are owners who are going to be in the audience, do they have seasonal businesses? Are they in retail? Are they in construction, so to speak? Are they, you know, service businesses and things like that? You need to know what the audience really wants to know and answer the questions that the audience wants to know. And generally, the person who is engaging with you to speak and has asked you to speak will know the answers to those questions. If they don't, I've asked to speak to several people who will be in the audience that they think would be good and ask those questions, you know, what would be important to get out of this presentation? What would make this one of the best presentations you ever heard? And, you know, get the answers, and then your presentation goes around and the PowerPoint slides, if you're using PowerPoint or the whatever, or the handouts or whatever you're using, feed off of what they want to know and what they want to take away. And if you just do a canned presentation and, you know, it's like you've done the same presentation 57,000 times, and I know I'm exaggerating here, it's not any good because there's, number one, probably no more passion in it, but number two, you're not communicating with the audience. The audience will tell you what they want to know. Answer what they want to know.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, Ruth, and the idea of asking people before you even put anything together, what type of information are you trying to get out of this presentation? And if you provide that, then there's a greater likelihood they'll actually pay attention to your presentation and not fall asleep or look at their phone, yeah, or look off into space.
Or get on their cell phones and play games or something like that.
Yeah, 100%. Do you ever get nervous before giving a presentation, Ruth? And if so, how do you deal with your nerves?
If I ever stop getting a funny feeling in my stomach before I go on, I will quit giving presentations. That's the adrenaline rush. I mean, it's not throughout the presentation, but it's that hit right before you go on when you're being introduced that gets you where you need to go. And if it ever gets to where it doesn't feel good and I'm not getting that adrenaline hit, I'm going to quit talking. I'm going to quit doing speeches, because then there's not the passion for it anymore. So yeah, do I get nervous? Yes and no. I mean, there's the adrenaline hit right before you go on and the feeling in your stomach. I don't know any other way to describe it, but it goes away once you been up there for 2, 3, 4 minutes because you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it comes down to, if you don't feel anything, it's because you don't care about the outcome. You don't care about what you're talking about. So it's important to have that feeling. It's just a matter of how do you manage it, and so that it doesn't overcome you and you end up getting on stage and maybe forgetting what you're going to say or stumbling and that type of thing. But I fully agree with you. Just that feeling of that pit in your stomach that you're actually going to go out there and convey information that's actually useful to people, that's something that shouldn't go away.
No, absolutely not. And you will stumble. I've stumbled. I have lost my train of thought over the years, everyone. It doesn't happen very often, but occasionally it does happen. And you just stop and say, lost my train of thought. Hold on 1 second and let me keep going. And people understand that. You're human. You're not a machine. You're not a robot. You're not an avatar giving a presentation, which better be canned and perfect. We're humans. We have emotions. We forget things, not major things, but you might lose a train of thought. Somebody might ask you a question that you don't know the answer to. And my answer always is, that is a really good question. I don't know the answer to that question. If you give me your business card, I will find the answer to it and get back to you. Don't be afraid of questions, because if you don't know the answer, say it, but say you'll get back to them.
Yeah, I think that's an appropriate response, especially if you don't know the answer. That's a great question. And I'll find out the answer. And in the event that you do know the answer, then maybe you should say that's a great question too. So those people think they ask great questions too.
I usually it was, I just did a presentation on Tuesday, and there was a, it was on being emotionally tough, and that type of thing. And at the end of the presentation, this 23-year-old kid raised her hand and said, "How do I deal with all the guys?" She's a heating and air tech. And I said, "You have to be the best. And you have to know that you're the best. And then you can deal with the rest. So get to be the best."
No pressure there, lady.
But she can do it. And her dad was pushing around, going, "See, told you so."
Okay, all right, be the best, why not? So when it comes to the conversation that we've been having, Ruth, for the people who are listening or watching and they're trying to get better or at least more effective at giving presentations or public speaking in general, what would your number one tip be?
Go to Toastmasters. Sign up for Toastmasters. Get involved with the Toastmaster chapter. They're all over the world. You can do them at breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and in between. They will be really good for you for practice. They will be really good for you to learn to think on your feet. And they will be really good and very gently empowering. I don't want to say the word critical, but they will tell you how to get better. And that I recommend that to every single person who's ever going to make a talk to management, to a group of 300 or 100 or 50 or whatever it is. Learn the trade. And it's not expensive. It's more of an investment of time. And make sure you do the homework and the exercises so that you can be ready to present the next time, next week, when there is a session.
Yeah, I was a member of Toastmasters for a number of years too. It's an excellent forum to practice public speaking and get that feedback. So thank you for offering that. This has been a really great conversation, Ruth. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me is my website, which is ruthking.info. It's really easy. All of the things that I do are on that site. So click around. There's videos, my books are there, there's speaking, there's all sorts of fun things. And ruthking.info is probably the best place to go.
Wonderful. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek, and you can learn more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Ruth.
Thank you.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms, or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.